Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're going to be continued today. We're going to talk about a book and the author of a book called To Be Continued. And it's very exciting subject matter. We've talked about it many times on the show, and you're familiar with the subject. It's great to hear it from different points of view, people with different purposes. And so this show is with Karen Berg. Karen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So glad you could join us. And I'm interested in who you are, where you're from, because there's a big story to that. You actually are a leader in this world, and a lot of people are very interested in your work and that of your husband as well. So could you tell us about that?
Oh, for sure. When I was very young, I was not particularly interested in late master faiths, okay? But I understood that there was always something in the universe. By the time I got to be 21, 22, I had tried to read as many books on esotericism. I would work with people to learn healing tools then, etc. But it was only when I reached to even read about the Kabbalah, when I finally met my husband today, I had remembered him from years back. And he was a different person. He was actually in the business world. And then 9 years later, reached out, not to him, but to somebody that I knew had worked for him. But he calls back. His teacher now passes away on the third day of this holiday of Passover. And it's now 7 days later. And he comes back from mourning his teacher, and I call him. And that started basically the relationship. Now, when we first started, I said to him, this is wonderful. This is a great tool. I mean, I've studied different teachings, and it seems to me that this is like the father of them. It has all the things that I would have wanted in the other teachings. And I learned with him together for a while. And then I said, well, why can't we form an organization and teach it to the masses? And the answer was, because nobody's done it before. Now, I'm a rebel. I'm not the person you say nobody's done it before. Because I said, so what? Why don't we go out there if we have something really strong and really good and we can put it in the language that people will understand, why don't we go out there and teach people? And so we moved to a foreign land, me, my husband, two children from a former marriage and $4,000. That was the start of everything. And we went to Israel because, I don't know, that's where I was told that we had a start. So we went to Israel, and we started teaching one person, and another person, and another person. And each person that came in, and mind you, when they came in to learn, they stayed in our place. And we didn't have exactly the largest flat either. But each person became like a son, and that person, after several months of being taught, we shipped them out to teach other people. And that's how the centers actually started. By one-to-one. When we came into the United States, about 7, 8 years later, I remember the very first interview we had ever given. And the photographer called up and said, tell me, how big is his Kabbalah? And is he going to have it with him? That's how much people understood about Kabbalah.
Is he keeping it in his pocket?
Yeah, did he keep it in his pocket? Exactly. And then from there, sat first in Queens, and people were coming, and then we were teaching teachers, and then we got busy with other things, and then we had other teachers, and then we turned around and we said, well, I guess the Creator wants this for the world, because take a look at what's happening. And basically, you know, and so many people through the years have come to us and said, you know, you need a plan, and you need to do this, and you need to do that, and probably they were right, but it didn't do so badly without the plan. I think I like the idea that we didn't make the plan for it to happen. That, you know, and then there were these centers and the people that gather to us want to be there, want to learn. And I'm happy to say that now I don't know. They asked me, how many centers do you have? The answer is, I never looked. I really don't know how many, 30, 40, something like that. But the important thing is, how many lives do we touch? I don't know the answer to that either. There's no way to know.
No, because you touch people's lives and they touch others' lives.
Right, others' lives. Mm-hmm. But me personally, I'm grateful that somebody has to be the messenger of something.
Right.
And I was allowed.
So let's talk briefly about the basic understandings, because we do want to get into the purpose of the book that you wrote, and that's about the teachings too, but it's more specifically directed. So the Kabbalah Center is based on an ancient Hebrew text, and it's called the Zohar, right?
That's correct.
So have you read the Zohar? Is it something that you teach from? I mean, is it something... I know that there are a lot of Orthodox Jews whose main purpose in life is to study. A lot of what they study the Zohar?
Most Orthodox Jews, actually. I mean, there are those who do, but very few of them spend their life studying Zohar. Most of them, most Orthodox people, schools, they call it yeshivot, it's Gemara, and it's Midrash, and it's different types of texts. The Zohar is an esoteric text, and that very few even today study in forms of a general education. We study Zohar, and it came down, you know, the teachings of Kabbalah predates the Bible, because the Kabbalah is the wise of the universe.
The what of the universe?
Why am I born here and not someplace else? Why, you know, into that family? And what is my purpose? Because we believe each one comes down here, not for the first time. And a lot of us carry with us karma from last lifetimes.
So that's fascinating that a teaching that's pre-biblical is about the purpose of life.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
Explaining.
And of course, being those esoteric teachings, it's probably the first teachings that ever came down. Like the Bible was the first teachings that ever came down. But the difference between the teachings of Kabbalah and, let's say, the writings of the different great faiths is that we believe in the spirituality, meaning that the light of the Creator is in each and everything that has energy, every human being, animals, etc. And that even though we may have whatever level it might be, if I pray, it's my modality. It's the way I reach my Creator. So whether I pray lying down on my knees or standing straight, it's my issue. But the energy of the light of God, the oneness, is in everybody. And that's what we try to join together, because that's what spirituality means. It's joining spirit. It's joining acknowledgement of human dignity and respect. And if we can somehow get people to understand that, and that with consciousness, with knowing in the morning, that what we say and how we say affect not only ourselves, but the people around us. It's the pebble in the water.
It's interesting. I have a practice, a healing practice and an intuitive practice, and many famous rabbis have come to see me.
Yes.
And we talk, and they all understand this. But a lot of Judaism is not based on this fundamental of God is in all of us and we are all the light of God. A lot of it is praying to a God in a sense that's separate from us.
Right. Exactly. And well, I think you said that quite well, that the difference between what spirituality is about and religion is oftentimes religion tries to separate. You know, we're infidels, or we're better, or we learn better, or whatever. But in spirit, there's no such differentiation.
We're just unfolding.
That's right.
And evolving. And that's what the Kabbalah Center is about helping us. And what's very valuable about your book is that it helps us understand this purpose and the purpose of lifetimes. And so your book is really about reincarnation, which you don't find in basic religions. So it's very important that you're teaching that so that we understand, we include that in our purpose, is to keep on reincarnating to keep doing a better job.
Exactly right. Exactly. And people, you know, like say, oh, well, I'm not asking anyone to accept or not to accept. It's just a concept that's taught in the Rabbi Isaac Luria. gave a whole textbook on the gates of reincarnation, which is so interesting because oftentimes, even within the Jewish faith, they have the tools, but they don't want to look that far. You know, that they're satisfied with what they have had, as many people in churches do the same thing. The difference, I believe, which is the most important difference that there is one learns spiritual teachings, they become more adaptable, pliable to the other peoples in the world. And that's what the world needs today.
Right. To share the light with each other and to honor the light in each other and the evolution that each soul is here to pursue. And
exactly
so,
right. Absolutely.
And so your book is so much about that. And there are a lot of nice little touches in the book. I like this one part where you suggest to ask for a sign of spiritual communication. You talk about the angels. There's a good part of the book that's about angels, and I'm very in favor of that. I've had my I'm an intuitive, so I hear from the spirit world every day.
Right.
I've had amazing input from that. At times, that has perhaps saved my life or certainly helped me take the next step forward. And we all get that. We're not all conscious about it.
But we all get that's the point. Most people don't know that there are entities that surround them all day.
Right. And so we all do have these spiritual inputs that we don't recognize because we're not taught to be spiritual beings.
Right. Yes, 100%.
Right. And so it's exciting when we can get that. And you talk about that in the book, how we can ask for signs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's so important to be able to do that and to see the signs when they show up.
Right.
And we can be...
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
The part about, you know, like people around you sort of say things. And when you hear a thing like... almost repeated in different ways three times. Well, somebody's trying to tell you something, you know?
Right. There's so many subtle hints of communication that we can be aware of if we pay attention to it.
Right. Absolutely.
So now we also are going to be talking about reincarnation. And this is something that I think is very important. There are so many people who have been taught that this is it. There's only one life, and when you're dead, you're dead. And, I mean, a lot of it just doesn't make sense because what is the purpose of it all then? We're just an accident, and...
Right. Then we're like cattle. We live, reproduce, and die.
Yeah.
Right? Without purpose.
That's what it looks like, and that's what a lot of the teachings are, and that's actually how science understands life. Not the advanced scientists, not the conscious scientists, but there's so much of science that doesn't even believe in consciousness. We have these lifetimes. How many lifetimes have you had?
Me? I only know of two or three, but I'm sure there was more.
Of course. We got around.
I'm sure we have. And I think the more the people that come, and the teachers, the intuitives, the healers, most of these people have had many lifetimes prior to that to get to that level.
Right, to be able to teach. We've had to
We've
been around the block a few times.
Right, exactly.
And you also talk about the proof of reincarnation, and I've done some shows about that. It's very exciting to see that children many times can remember past lifetimes.
Right, that was that whole study by Ian Stevenson, and Brian Weiss, I'm sure, has written about it as well,
Yeah.
I mean, Weiss, for instance, graduated Yale, and he's a medical doctor. Not slouches that are teaching and that are trying to prove. And I think it took a lot of guts for someone like Stephen Weiss to go out to start where he did, because at an era that when he first started, it was like, ha-ha. What's this guy talking about?
We were coming into an era of consciousness that people didn't realize. And nowadays, it's fairly common to understand what we're talking about. But 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, these were kooks.
Right. Absolutely kooks. I know. We were there at the very beginning, you know?
Right.
But But it was like alternative medicine, by the way. I don't know, 20 or 30 years ago, there were doctors being actually arrested for practicing unorthodox medicine.
For believing in nutrition.
Uh-huh. Or any of the things that today are absolute.
So it's really important for us to help move this along, and your book is terrific, to be continued, and it helps move the conversation along about our souls and what our purpose is. And so reincarnation is so important to appreciate as the way that we achieve our purposes in life. And we have to be careful about our lives, because we're going to find justice in the universe in our reincarnations.
Right, exactly. People say, okay, because we say the eventuality is that light will go back to the Creator. But the question is, how? If we go back to that eventuality, how much pain, how much suffering, and if we go back on two legs or four legs, that the time we spend doing our work is equally important, because as we can go up the spiritual ladder, it's unfortunately, but also we can fall. We can fall as well.
Right. And when we see a lot of grief in the world, there's so much of it that is based on previous incarnations. And so we can have compassion for people who have perhaps in previous lives made mistakes and are paying for them in this lifetime. And often those of us who are intuitive can go back into those previous lifetimes and see what really happened and help people understand.
Yes, you can. I think, or I believe, that those people that are capable of actually seeing are at a greater advantage than most of us. Because we just think that, oh, I've just done this action for the very first time. And that's probably not true.
We're in a process that we don't understand. There's a big story to our soul journey that we haven't been told about, and yet is what we're in this life for. So we're here to actually fulfill a soul purpose that might not make us happy as much as we'd like. And yet, what I like about the points you make about that in the book is having compassion for ourselves and each other in regard to our troubles.
We all fail. We all make mistakes. We all hurt people. You know, they say that 77 or 75% of our thoughts every day are negative thoughts. And that is what we bring into the universe. That part is so, and even if a lesser percentage, but is so. So if we're thinking like that, we have to alter that form of consciousness. The way we do it is through people that go out there and say, listen, you are what your consciousness is. I think that's a lesson for people.
Right, and yet these challenges sometimes are where our growth is, too.
Well, yeah, because you need the ladder. You need to be able to climb that spiritual ladder.
Well, some of us who are warriors,
yeah,
and I'm one of those, and we get criticized. Why, you know, if you worry so much, that's negative. You're really going to create trouble for yourself. And yet I find that worrying helps me solve more problems.
Well, it depends on, you know, if the worry is, I think that when we worry about, you know, when, like, for instance, this time, you know, at this time the world stands in the place of the darkness before the dawn. And so it's so heavy, it's so dark, that, yeah, one can say, how long is it going to take us to turn turn it around and
right,
make it more full of the light of energy.
And we can worry about it, but then the worry should get us to
work.
To go to work, right.
Yeah, exactly. Because sitting out the window and looking is what's going to happen. You know, it says that the person has negative points, not only for what he didn't do, what he could have done. Negative points not only for what he does, but in the situation of what he could have done and didn't.
Right. But I try not to second-guess life, because everything, I feel there's a divine purpose and a divine order to everything, and it's unfolding the way it's supposed to. We just trouble ourselves about it too much. And you talk about that in the book, about whether you see life as big mountains to climb or pebbles to skip over.
Opportunities to change. Opportunities.
Right.
Grow to a higher spiritual level.
Exactly.
And sometimes when we even fall. Sometimes we fall because we've left some energy there that we have to grow and pick up and grow it and bring it out.
And another point you make in the book is that we not only reincarnate alone, we actually reincarnate with soul families. We have groups that we have agreed to come into life with. And maybe that's also an opportunity for us to feel blessed and to bless others.
Yes, I think so. But, you know, the roles change. You know, here in Mexico City, I met a very interesting young six-year-old who was telling me about the planet that he comes from. And I asked him, I said, and who's your mom and dad? He said, oh, those are my children. And he was sitting on his grandfather's lap, 6 years old. And I said to him, and who's this? And he says, that's my brother. I says, really? He says, yeah. He says, why are we here? He says, oh, because in that world there is no chance of changing. And so he doesn't use the word creator. And so the power there brought me back here into this world because I need a change. And a six-year-old Mexican young man, I think it's marvelous to hear kids speak like that.
Right, there's so much wiser.
Don't try to change him.
Right.
Let him grow, you know?
Children are so much wiser than we give them credit for because they're more connected to that bigger picture.
Exactly. They don't have our veils. They're yet to be adulterated.
So I'm very excited. Your book talks about also tikkun, which is a Hebrew word, I think.
Cool, yeah. It means correction. It means that each one comes back here with a purpose, whatever that might be. And that purpose is probably the thing that hits him in the face, stares him in the face all the time as he grows. It's called correction. It's the point by which, you know, sometimes how lives have patterns, like people marry the same types of women, they live the same types of lifestyles. Also here, that there is a process for us to find the reason why we were put down here. And if we can find it and change it, because the tikkun is something that we didn't fix the last time around, then we can complete that process and bring the light whole back to its source.
I think this is a good word to carry around with us. So every time we bump into something, we go, ah, another tikkun. And
exactly.
see that as an opportunity.
Exactly. See it as an opportunity for change.
Right, but honor that. And I think so much of this book is about honoring the project that we're here for. That
yes, it is.
It is a project.
And this is a project, Mom. This is it. Either we do it now or this is it.
Right, there are no other projects except the one we're in.
In right now, exactly.
It's wonderful because it allows us to embrace it all. You know, we're facing such a difficult planet, a difficult time where the planet seems to be self-destructing, society seems to be doing that. And people don't realize that this is also tikkun.
Right. And payment for the years of greed and all kinds of the negative things that we as people have put into our atmosphere, into our water.
Right.
And, you know, everything that we do has a reverberation that comes back to us in one form or another.
But to think that it's all a big mistake, that, you know, and heaven forbid we should have been so stupid, is forgetting that we actually chose to come here for this.
Exactly.
And our souls knew that the world was going to go into this self-destructive extreme at this point in our lives. And we should expect to be here for that and then take it on as an opportunity of tikkun, of
true.
Correction.
Which we have.
And do
we
the best.
Elect, because we know once we leave this body, this vessel, then we're clear. We see. The soul can see. It only because of the way it's structured inside our vessel, which is the body, that stops it in a way from seeing. But up there, we all decide as to how we want to come back, what parents, et cetera, and so forth. And we decide on a way that will help us to correct that process that we call tikkun, obviously.
And even out there, we're actually shown the troubles that we're going to be facing.
Right.
And so our souls know it, our minds don't, and we trouble ourselves about it as if it's some big mistake. So the Kabbalah Center is doing a wonderful job helping people understand purpose, following the Zohar, which was about purpose. And it's exciting. This is something that is needed. Obviously, we need opportunities, leaders, teachers, to help us get straight about it, to give us some foundation in who we are and our purpose, and also community, too, and support and compassion from that community. It's a very helpful thing to be able to do that. And I really like the fact that you wrote this book to help people understand their true nature as souls and soul journey and how it works, and then actually how to see themselves in it. And you also talk about face reading and hand reading, palm reading.
Because those are just guidelines. They're markings. They're maps.
Good.
And you know, the handprint, for instance, changes every 5 to 6 months, which means we always have an opportunity to change in every way. But they're just simple tools to say and to help us to understand who the person is that we're with. What I wanted from the book, the main message, was yes, to teach them that we've all been around the block before, but that if we work and live without consciousness, then nothing actually can change in our lives, because it is up to us how we live, how we relate to the negative things or the very joyous and positive things that happen in our lives.
But it's important to keep on being conditioned by that. And that's what the Kabbalah Center does. That's what your book does. That's actually also what our interview is doing, that our listeners are then plugged again into this foundation of their soul journey that they can appreciate.
Yes, right, absolutely.
And you're now, I'm speaking to you down in, you're in Mexico City on your way.
Mexico City, yes.
On your way to where?
I'm on my way to London.
Okay, so you get around now. You're really, I guess, going to different centers and spreading the word.
Well, yes, because, first of all, this new book that's come out, so I basically go to give strength to the different centers, to lecture about things in the book, also to give them individuals, like I meet with people and talk to them about their issues. And when one gets it, it's hard to, in all of the centers, it takes maybe a good year to do that. But at least we try to give as many people as we can our energy. Me and my boys, we travel the world. You know, we live next to each other in California, but the chances of seeing each other on a weekly basis is slim to none.
Right.
Because each one of us is trying to go someplace to give some kind of message. And so I think for me anyway, that's my job, is to be the messenger for this type of work.
And you have sons who are also messengers, too.
Yes, Michael and Yuda. They also do writing and teach and travel. In 2 weeks, we're going to have a small group, like 200-300 people.
Small.
In Israel, to the birthday, the death anniversary of Rabbi Shimon Yochai, who was the author of the Zohar. We're all going to go there just to create a party in his name and a dedication to his work and to his life.
That sounds very nice.
That's the next journey after London.
Okay, good. So we're going to end the show. So I'm speaking with Karen Berg, the author of To Be Continued, and the subtitle is Reincarnation and the Purpose of Our Lives. And Karen, you're the spiritual director of the Kabbalah Center, which has large offices also and meeting rooms, I guess, in New York and in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, New York, Miami, Boca Raton, and study groups all over the United States. And of course, there's Mexico and Argentina and Brazil. And someplace you slip in the world, you can always slip right into the doorway.
Okay, this sounds great. Congratulations on building this.
Thank you so much, Peter, for having me. And I hope one day we get to meet in person.
That would be wonderful.
Pleasure.
Karen Berg, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thank you. All the best to you.
You too. Bye-bye. And this is Peter Roth, host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at Peter at Heart River, HEART River.org, or 212-222-7748. We're having lots of classes in New York, soon to actually be on the internet, some classes. And please tune into our website, heartriver.org. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you.